Hi, I'm Luke Imhoff. You may know me as Chronic Death on the internet. I'm full of autoimmune diseases. If anyone else is, there's a really good gluten-free bakery like three blocks away called Chambaland that everyone should try. Really good. I'm a member of the Lumen Core team, an architectural engineer at Dockyard, and most importantly for this talk, the creator of the IntelliJ Elixir plugin. IntelliJ Elixir is a plugin for JetBrain IDEs, IntelliJ, Community, or Ultimate Edition, of course, which supports any language, but also works for those coming from Objective-C background using AppCode, C and C++ using C-Line, SQL using Datagrip, Go using Golang, PHP using PHP Storm, Python using PyCharm, .NET using Writer, Ruby using RubyMine, or JS using WebStorm. In addition to the IntelliJ Community Edition, there is also a PyCharm Community Edition, so both those are completely free and open source. But the debugger and decompiler built into IntelliJ will actually decompile all the closed source IntelliJ IDEs just fine, which is really helpful for plugin development. IntelliJ Elixir features support for viewing internals of Beam files, building whole projects, code folding, commenting, uncommenting code, code completion, Credo integration, which is a stack analysis tool for like style checking, a graphical debugger, EX templates, which are used for our web frameworks, fine usage, formatting, GoTo declaration, related or symbol inspections with quick fixes, live templates, refactoring, run debug configurations, show parameters, SDKs, with full customization of both the Elixir pass and the Erlang pass, so you can mix like different versions of Erlang by selecting the code pass exactly. So if you ever see the release guide for Erlang, where it's like you can mix this version of the crypto package, but you need all these dependencies, you could try those out and not have to have like this specific version of Erlang. You can mix and match. There's also a structure view and a syntax highlight. One of the trickier features to implement was syntax highlighting and parsing when the project started. It is a translation of Elixir's native Lexer, which is written in just normal Erlang code, so it's just recursive Erlang, to Flex for IntelliJ Elixir, and Flex is a Lexer generator that generates really compact Java code. And Elixir's native parser, which is written using Yak, which is an Erlang version of Yak, which is yet another compiler that was originally written in C. To GrammarKit, which is a parser generator that some of the JetBrains people made for making these sort of plugins. Since the Elixir is written as Erlang functions, it can be a full Turing machine, but Flex can't. Flex is able to generate a very efficient grammar by translating regular expressions, but not extended regular expressions that you're thinking of, like just the mathematical definition of regular expressions, to a finite automaton, which is what makes it so fast. A finite automaton, though, lacks one important feature needed for Elixir. It cannot track infinite recursion of the language. Elixir requires this because you can nest any expression inside of interpolation, including more interpolation. And I have a feeling that an editor's grammar should always be forgiving, because most of the time you're writing bad code because you're writing partial code as you type. So I wanted to make sure that it wasn't like, well, I'm just going to find this as a regular expression and six levels deep, and if you're doing more than that, the editor will just give up. Like, no, I wanted the grammar to work the way people could potentially write bad code. So I want infinite recursion. To do that, Flex has an escape hatch, because you can write arbitrary Java code after you match on the normal regular expression. So I was able to add a stack in Java, and that way keep track of when you're entering a new interpolation by just treating it as entering a new Elixir file over and over again, and keep track of when you exit and that actually elevates it to a more complex form called the pushdown automaton. This is actually the minimum level of complexity you need in the like hierarchy of Venn diagrams for this to actually track like nested braces or parentheses. Now that the Lexers were equivalent, interpolation worked fine. When I got to the parser, I thought I had a lucky break. Both Yak and GrammarKit uses BNF. And from college, I'm like, BNF, great. That's universal. And so I copied it over, changed the Erlang to Java. I'm like, this is going to be easy. Yeah, nah, no. BNF is not a universal. It is actually totally tied to the parser generator you're going to target. The big difference here is that Yak is rightmost derivation, which means even though it reads like a human, it actually starts matching symbols reading backwards, for left-right languages, of course, while GrammarKit is leftmost derivation. The reason for that is that rightmost derivation are really fast parsers, which are great for compilers that don't have to be forgiving, but leftmost derivation can be like, this is what I need to keep going, which is really good for an editor. But the problem is, one, for rightmost derivation, you want one sort of recursion on one side, and for leftmost derivation, you want the other kind. And if you just do it directly, you'll just have recursion that never picks up a new symbol. So they're completely incompatible, and they're kind of translatable as a human, but it is like an NP-hard problem to have a general solution for translating a grammar. So it's all by hand. Good luck. The problem with translating from rightmost derivation to the leftmost derivation is Elixir's do-end syntax and optional parentheses. This code has two possible interpretations. The do-end can be a block argument to either the left call or the right call. Elixir associates the do-end with the outermost left call. It turns out this happens for free in LALR, but for LL parsers, a special rule needs to be defined in the BNF that disallows do-end blocks inside them. This unfortunately meant duplicating large chunks of the grammar, because the do-end block can appear in almost any operation, because Elixir is mostly defined with macros. Like, there is no module keyword. It is def module, and that is a macro. And like, it is all built up, so everything potentially can support do-end, which is only used for macros. When experimenting with optimizations, I like to use the beam chunk viewer. A beam file is composed of chunks. There's an ATU8 that stores the UTF-8 atoms. It has replaced the older atom chunk, and so you can view the actual characters in the atoms and see like what is being treated as a constant. The string 8 chunk shows something unexpected. It's not a table of strings, but a pool of one continuous string. And the reason why this works is the bytecode itself in the beam has like an offset into this table and then the length of the string to copy out. But what you can do is that under certain conditions, the Erlang Elixir compiler will be like, oh, this string is the suffix of another string, so I can just smush them together, and your pool table will actually be more compact than you would expect if you have common suffixes or prefixes, and you can actually look at this to be like, did that optimization happen? While the string 8 chunk only holds strings, the lit t table or literal table chunk holds all literals, so this way you can double check that your literals really are literals and they're not being computed at runtime, which this is slightly faster, but it shows up as a true literal. The import chunk is the import table. It maps an index to a module and function that was imported. Before I wrote the chunk viewer, I didn't actually realize remote calls are just declared in a separate chunk like this. I thought it was just a call to the runtime with like the module functionality that it want you to call. So it's kind of interesting to see that modules know this just statically. Those imports are imported by the export or export table chunk. The labels map to labels in the code chunk. Anonymous functions defined by the module are in the Funtier function table chunk. But somewhat confusingly, there is also the local function table chunk, or loct chunk. However, this has more entries because if any named normal defined function is captured, it also shows up here. So you can see like all the weird names with the dashes are actual anonymous functions that have derived names. But all the ones from like 12 onwards with build state are we're capturing that to use as like an anonymous function closure that we can evoke with apply. The line number information for stack traces stored in the line chunk is composed of two tables that are used to normalize the file name. You may have noticed that the file table can hold multiple names. This may seem unexpected, but Erlang actually supports an attribute to say that this chunk of code actually comes from a different file, and that's used all over the place in Elixir because of the macro, so that when a macro pulls in code from another place, we can actually blame it on the file it's coming from for better stack traces than just having like the line where the macro occurs being the place that where the error happened. It also is used in EX for Phoenix views so that you end up blaming the EX file and not the view module that it goes in. The information from these chunks are used in the code chunk. By default, IntelliJ Elixir will inline as many of the references in other chunks to view of the code. So this language does not exist. I made it up. But it is as close to what Beam Disassemble, a tool in Erlang, spits out, but more flexible and more Elixir-ish looking syntax. You can also turn off all the inlining to kind of see what the code looks like, but the code in the code chunk is not Erlang's external term format. It is a more compact form that is specially adapted for code. So it only occurs in code, and nothing can really read it except Beam Disassemble and this editor. I think people did a port to VS Code after I put this out, so there's a VS Code plugin that does it too now. By looking at the code, we can find if changes in our source impact beam files. So one of the big things to always look for is if your pattern matching is super efficient, you'll get a select val instruction. So any arguments you have with your friends about, like, is this code more efficient, you can just look and see if it generates good bytecode. You can also do cool things like if you argue, like, do you match your... if you're trying to do a pattern match with like nested matches, does the order matter? You can look at the code and see, is the code longer to change that order? Sometimes it is, because matching first means it's the first variable, which means it gets the next call very easily. And if you flip it the other way, it's not. The debug I or debug info chunk is optional, but if it is there, the chunk viewer can show the internal implementation. If you click on the whole module, all the debug info's code form will be converted back to code. This looks a little bit messy with extra parentheses, because that's just how macro to string works. And I'm not actually using macro to string, but I re-implemented in Kotlin to do this. If you click on a function, all the clauses of the function are converted back to code. And you can do the same thing with individual clauses. This also works for Erlang, but since this is the Elixir plugin, not the Erlang plugin, I translate the Erlang to the equivalent Elixir for you. So if you're like, I don't really want to learn Erlang, you don't have to. If you see, like, so this is what I show you in the debug info, but this is what the actual code looks like. So it's close, but see, I'm automatically changing the variable names to be Elixir-ish. You know, we can't use capitals because then they turn into aliases. So, like, they're slightly incompatible syntax, and this way you can understand if you're not up to speed with reading Erlang code yet. One of the original reasons I created the IntelliJ Elixir plugin was because I wanted a graphical debugger for Elixir that rivaled the one in RubyMine for Ruby. That debugger in RubyMine allowed me to level up my understanding of Rails quickly, and I felt that the same would be true if I had a graphical debugger for Elixir. Let's say I want to understand how EX templates work in Phoenix. I can go into an EX template, place a breakpoint in the gutter marked here by the red dot. I can then right-click test directory to run the test in the debugger. And it crashes. Oh, no. What happened is that the debugger can't debug NIF modules, because the way the debugger the stepping debugger in Erlang works is that it is an interpreting debugger, and you can't interpret NIF since they're just C code. But we could ignore it. So we can tell it either at the individual run configuration level or in the entire IDE if the run configuration isn't set yet to be like, ignore this file, and it won't do it anymore. This is also a bunch of stuff you see there is pre-ignored, because those are usually like middleware stuff that if it was interpreted, your app would run so slow that it would be painful to debug. So it ships with a bunch of defaults, which makes my version of the debugger slightly faster than VS Code's because it doesn't ship with that. Then when we rerun the debug configuration, we stop at the breakpoint line as indicated by the blue highlight. Once stopped, we can look at the stack frames to figure out how Phoenix actually calls our templates. So templates are actually compiled into the view modules in Phoenix. So you see here it says user view. It's not in the template file. We can also click on the lower stack frames and see their variables, which in this case lets us understand how Phoenix layouts render their wrap views. In the selected frame, we can see the variables and their values. And one of the benefits of a GUI debugger is that you can choose how you see information, so I'm able to expand assigns and find the values of the username field. I always found this super useful, going all the way back to when I used Eclipse. Like, I loved Eclipse for C++ because of like this GUI support for deeply nested structs, and like I loved it so much that I was able to do it here for my debugger. If you're in the top stack frame, you can also run arbitrary code. That's the limitation of the underlying DBG library in Erlang, is that it stops you from running arbitrary code in lower frames because it might have a side effect and might mess with the stack, so you can only do the top frame. So I unfortunately have to do it here. So this looks really simple. You're just doing dots, but that Elixir code is actually a bunch of map lookups, but it's not obvious. So here's more complex code. I'm using a with macro with pattern matching and do end, and it all still is evaluated because it's translated into Erlang code the same way that the IX Pry debugger does it. I just copy their code. The API is very unstable, though, and Jose Valim, the creator of Elixir, allows me to use it, but he says only I'm allowed to use it because he knows I won't complain when he keeps breaking my stuff. I actually did fix a bug with 192 plus last night because of that. You can also step. So we're able to step here. The reason why it's at the top twice is that a lot of Elixir macros blame the first line of a file. So we step and we go up twice because that's it printing that HTML. Even though we see it on line 8 and 11, it actually assigns that HTML as being happening on line 1 of the module. To understand why a function exists, is it safe to change delete? It can be helpful to do find usages. We can find modules. We can find individual functions. This also works with library functions, so I can right-click find usages on enumInto, and it'll find all the uses of that function. If you're just trying to like understand something in the standard library, like how do people actually use this function, or why is this function used here, you can go and find everywhere else someone uses it to understand code better. There's also, the reason why this works is there's a decompiler that doesn't depend on debug I. It goes into just the X ports and loc, and it can do the Elixir. It can also do macros. It can do special forms. It can also do Erlang in the same way, and that's how all the GoTo and declarations work. So that references and GoTo declaration doesn't use the compiler LSP. Part of this is, like I said when I had the question earlier today, is that the Elixir language server depends on the Elixir compiler, and there's no like forgiving mode. So if your code doesn't compile, a lot of the Elixir language server stuff just breaks. So instead, this is all built on using GrammarKit, which, again, is a JetBrains tool for writing these sort of parsers. And that, because it's an LL parser, is forgiving. So I'm able to, if you have broken code, I can still find usages in your file, even though it's broken. And it works if you don't compile. So the Elixir language server requires that mixed compile completed for it to like work. And mine doesn't. But what this also means is that the compiler won't keep around. It won't track like all the imports. It'll track that import happened, but it won't allow you to really blame it where it came from. It'll be like, this was imported from this module, but it won't tell you, this is the line the import happened on. So by me statically analyzing the code, I'm able to show you like the actual function call at the top. But the second entry, I can be like, here's the line where you imported that function. So if you just have a bare function, you're like, where is this coming from? You can click on that second entry and be like, oh, here's the import line that's bringing it in. That's where this is coming from. So I find that very useful. This also can walk through quoted blocks, so it can go pretty deep. It's OK with Phoenix, but Phoenix does this weird thing where like if you do the use the application stuff with like colon controller, it immediately doesn't apply, and like that sometimes works. It's touchy because it's very weird metaprogramming from anywhere else. So you can, the source for it is under my GitHub at IntelliJ Elixir. It's in the marketplace in JetBrains, so you can install it whenever. I have donations for like everything I can find, Open Collective, PayPal, GitHub's like own sponsor thingy. Like, yeah. Any questions? Am I aware of any implementations of the parser besides mine? Not that I'm aware of. So like mine is a complete re-implementation. So I actually found bugs in the original native implementation because I have way more test cases because I didn't trust that I understood how to use GrammarKit. It took me a year to get it right. And so I kept finding bugs in like the actual Elixir, Erlang, and Yek that they had to fix. I haven't seen anyone else be nuts enough to do it. Everyone else I know is just using the Elixir language server now, and that's just using whatever mixed compile can do.
What kind of refactorings are supported by
Quantum? So what kind of refactorings do I support? Because the JetBrains API for refactoring is related to references and fine usage, once I implement fine usage, I got rename support. So function renames work like across files, not just in the current file. You can rename parameters and variables, and that works too. Yeah. I don't think module rename works, and that's mostly because I would have to also support like asking you if you want to rename the file and I never got around to it. I mean, Elixir doesn't require the files to match, but it annoys me when it doesn't because I'm like a build engineer and I'm like, the file system should match the files even though the language doesn't require it. Any other questions? No, did I have to only do the parsing GrammarKit? No, the find usage is what's called an extension point in JetBrains. Open API is the thing they call it, plugins target. And I didn't implement that. And there were some weird gotchas about like whether a function should, if you go to definition on a when you're already on the function call, should it go to itself? And Elixir made it even harder because the def keyword is a macro, so like if you go to definition on the def keyword, you technically should go to the def macro, but if you go on the name of the function, it should just go back to the function. And I have it go back to the function now, but I had to do some weird things to make fine usage not think you're already at the definition. So it works. I'm not 100% sure I used the API correctly, though. It was mostly sitting in the debugger and figured out why it didn't work and making it like miss those branches. But I've never had someone from JetBrains tell me I'm doing it wrong, so I don't know.
I'm quite amazed by this project, actually. I'm an Emacs user. I use the language server, and it feels sometimes a bit limited. So I was wondering, how many users use this? And I think a lot of other, could the Elixir language server somehow benefit from this? Could you, make, a Java-based language server to support, VS Code and Emacs with your
I don't see why I couldn't show this as a language server to other stuff. I don't know how I would host it. I never really thought about it. I know people have made their plugin.
Internal APIs.
Right. I know people have packaged their plugins as jars to kind of do this for other reasons before, but I've never tried it. And going for number of users, it varies a lot. If I don't do releases for a long time, I get between 5 and 15,000 installs, but I don't know how many actual users, because I don't have any metrics. I just have the download statistics from the thing. So I don't know if that's that many actual users. All I have is unique downloads to go by. So maybe 5,000-ish? I'm not sure, though.